So Elijah is in a crisis of faith. He's in a spot he's never been before. God's presence has always been with him. And in fact, just a few chapters prior to our reading today, he's like in a big stadium and he's battling with the prophets of Baal, right? The small g god. Brings down God's power, even showing off a little bit by setting fire the sacrifice after only he's doused it with water first, just to show how powerful God is. And then he kills all their prophets. The Bible is really not for children. So he kills all their prophets. And then the queen, Jezebel, says, I swear by the gods I worship that if you're not dead by the end of the day, I'll wish that upon myself. So he's running for his life, right? Because he's just killed all the prophets of her god. So off he goes, and he's in a deep depression because he's not eating. And he's just laying down wanting to sleep. And he's praying. Actually, we said that we heard the word spoken today that he wants to die. He says that his life is no good. He's done. If this isn't a crisis of faith, I don't know what is. So an angel of the Lord brings him food and water, saying, you're going to need it for the journey ahead. And 40 days later, he's told to go stand in the cave on Mount Horeb, probably the cave where Moses had his great encounters with God. And he's told to go there because the Lord is about to pass by. So there was wind, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, and the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. Did Elijah look for God in the wind and in the earthquake or in the fire? We don't know. Or did Elijah think, great, another thing that's going to kill me, right? Did he think it was just more chaos coming to disrupt his life that was suddenly not going the way he thought maybe it would? And I wonder, is this your experience of God? Looking for God only to find more and more chaos, a life falling apart, things not going like you thought they were supposed to go? So often, I think for many of us, our experiences of God are more like how the passage ends, the sound of sheer silence. And I'm willing to bet that most of you in this room don't like silence, other than, you know, sleeping and needing to calm yourself down. Because we've all got smartphones, and most of us have smartphones, and we have earbuds and television or the internet, YouTube. Maybe you've got kids and Spotify and podcasts and iTunes, Netflix. Silence lays bare, exposes our noisy brains, our endless worries, our harsh inner monologues that are spinning throughout us. Silence can be deafening. So what happens? What happens in the silence you encounter in your life? What happens in the silence in today's story? Does God finally get a word in edgewise? Do you hear things you don't want to hear? Do you hear a word that is just hard? Because when it's all settled down and the deafening sound of sheer silence is rattling around that cave, that Elijah is standing in. He wraps himself up and he goes and he stands in the mouth of the cave where he speaks to God. And God says, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Because he's been on the run. He's been afraid. He thinks he's the only one left. He wants to die. God says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Listen, I've been working my heart out for you. And everyone's against you now, God. They've destroyed all your places of worship. They've killed all the other prophets. And now I'm alone and they're trying to kill me." Now listen. Listen closely to God's response to Elijah. He doesn't say, "Elijah, it will all be okay. You know, it'll all work out. I'm doing this for a reason. This all happened for a reason." God doesn't say to Elijah, "You're blessed, so go home and hunker down in the safety of your friends and family." God brings a hard word for Elijah. He says, "Get busy. You have to anoint 2 kings. Oh, and by the way, you're going to anoint a new prophet. He's going to put his own self out of a job. He's going to anoint Elisha to be the next prophet." And then God reminds him, there are 7,000 others that are faithful. "You are not alone," says God to Elijah. "You were never alone." So friends and family and confirmation youth, hear this today especially as you say yes to your baptisms, as you stand in front of your friends and your family and you confess the triune God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit. Hear this today about this story. You are not alone. Just as Elijah was not alone, you are not alone. Even in the deafening sound of sheer silence that sometimes you experience in your relationship with God, God has not abandoned you. Even in a deep, dark depression that maybe you've gone through or maybe you will go through in your life, whatever wilderness you will encounter in your life, this story is a reminder that God is with you, that God's presence never leaves you, that you are not abandoned by the God who calls you by name and loves you. Even when it seems like your life is crumbling apart, God will be faithful to you and love you. God will tell you what to do next, just as he told Elijah what to do next. Now, maybe it won't be as clear as it sounds in the Bible story today, because it's like Elijah says, "What should I do?" And then God says this, right? And it's not an easy thing he's told, but you might not get that direct an answer, or maybe you will. I'm not going to rein in how God might work in your life, right? But God's going to be with you, following along with you, helping you make decisions, even going with you when you make the wrong ones. God won't leave you. God won't leave you. Not ever. God will remain faithful to you, even when you're in your wilderness. Even when you're in the best spot in your life, God will be with you. This is a life of faith. And isn't that about the best news you've ever heard? And we say, thanks be to God.